Hi, Chief Halton here at Fire Engineering Podcasts, and we are being brought to you by Tenkata Protective Fabrics and their Made for Life podcast hosted by Stuart Perry. The Made for Life podcast unearths the work experiences of real men and women who rely on the protective clothing and equipment to get the job done. From firefighters to industrial workers to military personnel, recent episodes explore the dangers and challenges of wildland firefighting, peer counseling for first responders, and the ins and outs of turnout gear. It's the Made for Life podcast from Tenkata Fabrics. Find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And thank you for listening to Fire Engineering.
We've been visiting with District Chief Dave McGrail from the Denver, Colorado Fire Department. Hey, I need to ask you a question. I want to move a little bit down the road here with something. You mentioned Engine 3, and I really want to pick your brain while we have some time about engine ops and firefighter survival through good engine company operations. Engine 3, as the commander and favorite crew, best crew, I know you probably had a ton of them, you know, with guys moving out, everybody gets promoted, but is there a couple people you could pick off of there that you'd bring with you anywhere and because of what traits?
Oh, you know, it's an interesting thing because, you know, the modern day Engine 3 of 2009 is still, as far as I'm concerned, just a real exceptional engine company. And I don't know whether there's something in the walls of that firehouse. It's an interesting old firehouse in the city. It's the oldest firehouse in Denver. It has a tremendous history. And part of that history is the Engine 3 of the early part of the 20th century on the Denver Fire Department was actually a segregated firehouse. It was a firehouse that had all African-American firefighters. And in that community where Engine 3 is, the Five Points community of Denver, is predominantly an African-American community. But it was interesting, that was a segregated firehouse. And across the street from the current firehouse is the old 1800s firehouse, and the new, if you will, 1930s Engine 3 firehouse is just a tiny, tiny firehouse. It is literally a building that is, I mean, I'm not even sure if it's 1,000 square feet, to be honest.
Wow.
It's a tiny firehouse. Compared to these Taj Mahal firehouses that we see being built, you know, in the 21st century, where everybody has their own room and their own cable TV and their own air conditioning thermostat, that sort of thing. There's all these creature comforts. Engine 3, everybody, including the officers, is in an open dorm. The open dorm is a few feet away from the pumper, which is a few feet away from a watch desk, which is a few feet away from the kitchen. And it's interesting because even though this is a firehouse that doesn't have what most people would consider to be the modern creature comforts of a firehouse, I don't know that there's a company on our department that has a stronger level of esprit de corps and teamwork, cohesiveness as they do at Engine 3. And it's interesting because they are together all day. They're together on that apparatus floor. They're together at that watch desk. They're together in the kitchen. They're together in the bunk room. And when that fire company leaves that firehouse, it's by far one of the best that I know of. I believe there's a lot of exceptional fire companies on the Denver Fire Department. Certainly Engine 3 is one of them. So, you know, there's a number of firefighters that I've worked with over the years. One of my mentors, Steve Garrett, was the captain of Engine 3 before I got there, and then I took over when he left. And my close friend, Phil Miller, is a lieutenant in Engine 3 now. But it's just really a top-shelf engine company. But I guess if I was king for the day, Rick, I would say, you know, maybe we should go back to building firehouses that really, you know, enhance the team concept, the cohesiveness, and the esprit de corps, because here's a firehouse where, you know, I'm certain that there are some individuals on the Denver Fire Department, the last place in the world they'd want to work would be Engine 3. But there's a pretty long list on the transfer requests to go into Engine 3, and I think the reason why is because there's a lot of good young firefighters and young officers that say, geez, I want to work at that company because they are tight, and they really are. And I think it, many years ago when that firehouse was built, I think it was built as a segregated firehouse without a lot of creature comforts, and it has evolved into a place where there's a lot of good firefighters want to work there. So it has a tremendous history.
Dave, you are, in fact, coincidentally, we just opened up Firehouse 7 a couple weeks ago here, and it's a tower ladder battalion chief with his driver, and I've got assistant chief ops there, net. And we went away from it, and you are right on, brother, with you and I get the opportunity to travel all over the country, and what we're seeing is you're seeing that when a firefighter, we're losing that family, we're losing that cohesiveness you talked about, because they walk in, Dave, with their laptop under their arm, and I used to say their SpongeBob SquarePants lunchbox, but they walk in, they go right to their dorm, they close the door, they come out, they check the room, they go back in there, they have their own cable, they have their own computer, they have their own stuff, and some of them aren't even eating together. They're not even having the meal together anymore, which some of the most incredible times in the firehouse is at the kitchen table. We went with a bunk room. Now, it's not open air per se like we used to have, but there's no door. We have the little 6-foot wall, so you're not sneezing on each other, but there's no doors. There's an end table, and there's a chair, and there's a place to hang your clothes. The locker room is separate. I'm trying to get away from the cubicle condominium style firehouse. You know, we talk about co-ed, you know what, you wear shorts. That's why we have separate female and male locker rooms and shower facilities and all that. But the bunk room is together. You are so right as rain, brother, when you talk about that. And we want to talk about being brothers and family, but yet we're doing everything we can to get away from it.
Well, it's interesting because I'm fortunate and very blessed moved into this segment of my career. I'm working at a firehouse on the west side of the city, just west and southwest of downtown from where Engine 3 is, and I'm at the Firehouse 23 on South Federal Boulevard. And it's not as old a firehouse as Engine 3's firehouse is, but certainly by Denver Fire Department standards, Station 23 is an older firehouse. Two-story, firehouse still has the poles in it. The poles are actively used. There's an open bunk room on the second floor. And, in fact, the chief's quarters, because it gets so hot in there, I leave my door open at night so I can get some of the swamp cooler into my room. And it is open dorm. The officers use the same bathroom as the firefighters. Everybody's there together. And I was commenting the other night when I was talking to a couple of firefighters out behind the firehouse, there's a little area there with a table and some chairs, and fellas are smoking their cigars, just talking after the meal. And a great deal of esprit de corps and cohesiveness there at Station 23 as well, because it's an older firehouse, doesn't have a lot of the creature comforts. When something's watched, a movie, a ball game, whatever the case may be, the majority of the people are in the kitchen watching it on that TV that sits up in the corner, up toward the ceiling in the corner of the kitchen. And it exudes esprit de corps and cohesiveness and teamwork. And as kind of a side note to that, Rick, now, you know, with the budgets being tight and that sort of thing, it was interesting because our department recently put out information to all the firehouses in terms of what their energy use is, the cost for gas and electric in these firehouses. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because these older firehouses, like Station 3, cheap energy cost in those firehouses. The brand new ones, the Taj Mahals, 5 digits of monthly energy cost, just over the top. And I certainly never went anywhere with this, but I'm thinking to myself, you know, what's going on here? Why is it that our older buildings are so much more efficient to run and so much cheaper to run in terms of the energy cost and that sort of thing? I just found that real interesting that maybe we should rethink that and go back the other direction. By the way, thank you for taking me by the new firehouse there in Lewisville. I love that firehouse, and when you mentioned that a few minutes ago, I can picture the front of that firehouse with the big 7 on it and the work that you guys have done to, you know, make the modern firehouse look a little bit like the older firehouses and keep some of that tradition that we've grown up with.
Well, that was now our now former mayor, who just retired after 20 years. He said, I want the PT Cruiser of firehouses, Chief. I want a new firehouse that looks old. And we did the bifold doors and the watchtower with the bell, and it just, and but it's the incredible thing about Dave is that it's just done incredible things for our response times when it comes to getting around the city. Hey, engine operations, I wish we had all the hours to go through. I've just sat through numerous classes that you've done, and I always learn something. Let's talk specifically about when you're delivering your programs, if you can key in on a couple of things, engine operations, and couple that. We talked about before, and as much as I'm a truckie at heart and all that, we've never beat a fire out with a pike pole, and it all starts with the engine work. I mean, firefighter safety and survival through engine company operations. Hit me with a few things you feel are key when it comes to good engine ops from Chief Dave McGrail.
Well, you know, it certainly all relates back to that issue of mindset and stuff that my father taught me many years ago. And mindset and preparation is key to our success above and beyond all else. But as we've been talking here, you know, in going back to the sweat the small stuff type mindset, if you know, you've studied Charleston, as I have. We've both studied Southwest Supermarket Fire in Phoenix. And I think about those fires frequently, especially from the standpoint that those were both rubbish fires on the outside of the building. That's how those started, was rubbish fires on the outside of the building. And so the beginning to me for the engine company officer is just that mindset of when you roll up on scene, the real good firefighter, the real true professional firefighter and fire officer is that individual who has the ability to look beyond the obvious. So many guys just get frozen in on the obvious, and they don't have the ability to look beyond the obvious. Looking beyond the obvious and thinking about certainly what this is going to be or what it might look like 10 minutes from now. You know, both tragic fires in Phoenix and Charleston, and they started out as rubbish on the outside of the building. I think Chief Brunicini did us a great favor when he talked about the Southwest Supermarket fire, and he you know, reflected on this idea that oftentimes we in the fire service are in the residential firefighting mindset, and we have to up it and be prepared for these other operations. Personally, I would like to see us be in the commercial firefighting mindset all the time, including at our residential fires, and then we'll be ready to do whatever it is that comes up. But in terms of the engine company stuff, it's that proper mindset, and then the thing that I always harp on and I always talk about with the company officers that work with me is focusing on proper weapon selection, and it starts with first understanding the weapons and understanding that the inch and three-quarter hose line, albeit our workhorse weapon, the weapon that's going to take care of the vast majority of our problems, for them to understand it's firing 175 GPM bullets. That's what it's firing. You know, depending on the nozzle used and that sort of thing, it can hover above that, below that, whatever the case may be, but a good rule of thumb figure is 175 GPM, and for those fire officers and firefighters to understand when it's appropriate to go with 2.5, to train with 2.5 appropriately before it's needed so they have the ability to use it. And certainly if they have to take a step bigger, going up to the master streams, whether it's the deck gun or using it as a portable device, but having the ability to do that is critical. So the overall idea of weapon selection and the fact that, once again, even though our inch and three-quarters is our workhorse weapon and it's going to work for us at the vast majority of what we do, having the ability to go above that when it's appropriate. And the good engine company, like the Engine 3s and the Engine 23s of the Denver Fire Department, those engine companies have the ability to use 2.5 because they train on it. And because they train on it, the night that they need it, they're able to step up that weapon to a more powerful weapon. So to me, those are the big things, Rick, is just that mindset, that preparation mindset, and then understanding those weapons and understanding when and where it's appropriate to move forward. I certainly didn't mention the booster line. We have booster lines at the back end of Denver pumpers, and they're frequently used for, the fires such as dumpster fires and small rubbish fires, that sort of thing. But they're not used for car fires, and they're certainly not used for structural firefighting. And, whether it's the Langvart building or Southwest Supermarkets or Charleston, South Carolina, whatever the case may be, you can give a firefighter a scenario when he's preparing for an assessment center, and you can talk about what you should do and why you should do it, that sort of thing. To me, if it's a commercial building, and there's an engine 3/4 going in the front door, engine 3/4 or less going in the front door of a commercial building, you and I can write the ending to the story.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's not going to be a pretty ending, and it could be a tragedy. So got to know when we need to move forward, move up with our weapon selection.
And then that's not exactly, you're not bringing a knife to a gunfight unless you're really good with a switchblade. And my good buddy Tom Freeman, for years, you know, has said that a good officer is the one that can predict his or her next alarm. Just like you said, go long, read the building, read the smoke, read the fire. But time and time again, you hit it right on the head again when you said we fight too many buildings, too many commercial buildings, like residential fires. And if you train with the 2.5, and we've done it, in Illinois that was just big time. Once you get into it, you go, you know, this really isn't that difficult. And Dave, tell me if you agree with this one. It is rarely wrong to pull too big of a line on a fire. Once in a while, you didn't need as much that time, but it is rarely the wrong thing to do to bring too much water to what you're doing.
Well, and I guess I look at it slightly differently. I would say that it's probably never going to be wrong from the standpoint of when an engine company stretches 2.5 to what that officer believes is necessitates the need of a 2.5, and the hindsight being 20/20 post-incident critique or analysis shows, well, we probably didn't need the 2.5. To me, it was an opportunity for them to train. It was a gem of an opportunity for on-the-job training, and it's not a wasted opportunity at all, because the fact that they stretched that 2.5, and perhaps it wasn't needed in terms of water delivery or bullets being fired to overcome the BTUs, it was a tremendous training opportunity. It just makes them that much better for the next time that they truly need the 2.5. And, you know, one of the things that I do, and I've really adopted it from what we've learned from FDNY, and we all know FDNY is the biggest and busiest fire department in the nation. I think there's a tremendous amount to be learned from them and from every other fire department in the country for that matter as well. But if you look at FDNY, when they stretch and operate a 2.5, even with the resources that they have, which is a tremendous amount of resources, tremendously more than most of us for sure, they always pair up their engine companies on a 2.5. And that's one of the things that I do in District 7 on the Denver Fire Department. I tell my officers, if you select 2.5 on the front end, one of the first things I'm going to do as the incident commander of that incident is assign a second engine company to assist you on that 2.5. And it's somewhat of an unorthodox idea with a lot of firefighters, because my fire department is no different than most. There's a great deal of competition among fire companies and engine companies, and when we're responding to a fire, certainly the one engine company, all of the engine companies, they want to be the one that get there first, put their line down on the ground first, and get their water on the fire. To me that competition is healthy, but the real professional fire officer understands where competition stops and teamwork begins. And albeit a very unglamorous job to assist on the back end of a 2.5, if we have a second engine company assisting on the back end of the 2.5, then that first engine company as the attack team up near the nozzle is going to be able to move that line forward and actually get to the seat of the fire deep inside of a commercial building, whatever the case may be.
Well,
so,
Dave, let me ask you this question. And this often happens. You mentioned something. You know, guys always feel that if they don't have the knob at the fire, you know, if they're the heel man, the control, whatever, you know, that. And I try to emphasize to our folks that one of the most critical, one of the most important roles you can play on that attack line is that of the heel man, you know, whether it's feeding hose, whether it's pushing for, you know what I'm saying, or backing up that firefighter's on the nozzle. I think sometimes that's one of those positions that's often overlooked or not given the importance it should be. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that, you know, I mean, at most of the fires that we go to in Lewisville, Texas, and Denver, Colorado, they're going to be fires that are quickly handled with very little water from the first attack hose line. And the one and only guy that really gets a tremendous amount of satisfaction in a lot of those fires is the guy that's on the nozzle. Somebody's got to be, like you say, the backup guy, the heel guy. Somebody's got to be doing a search. And then, of course, very unfortunate but true, a lot of guys, when they're assigned to be the writs, oh, geez, it's like almost like it's the end of the world. What could be a more important job at a fire than being your brother's keeper as part of the RIT team. So every job on the fire ground is important, albeit that not all of the jobs are going to be as glamorous as we would want them to be for us. You know, we want to be on the nozzle. We want to be on the roof cutting that hole. We want to be doing a search in a critical area, maybe on a floor above, whatever the case may be. And certainly we all get our opportunity to do that. But we all have the opportunity much more often to be in a more of a support role, if you will. But if that support isn't going on, the overall operation is going to fail.
Well, and I've got, let me see if I can narrow this down. We got about 10, 15 more minutes, Dave. But if I could ask you, walk me through, if let's go back to Engine Dave, as you're riding the seat. You're that captain on an engine again, and you can see the header. You know what you got. Let's just deal with a decent sized single family dwelling with a good fire. What are your thoughts? If you could pick like maybe four or five key things regarding engine operations, you're coming down the block. Give me maybe the Dave McGrail's top five you're thinking about as the captain on that engine as you're pulling up to that scene.
Well, you know, I come from a slightly different perspective on the Denver Fire Department, because on the Denver Fire Department, our first due engine company always lays the supply line. And I like that because there's a little bit of a mindset issue associated with that, and it kind of puts us in that, to me, in the position of we're preparing for and ready to do battle with a fire. So, you know, within our procedures, first due engine company, on a report of smoke, fire, or odor in a building, they lay a supply line. And I'm talking about, you're at the end of the block, and even if there's nothing showing, there's a supply line going in the street. Now, our primary supply line is a 3-inch supply line, and we use hydrant valves so that we can augment the pressure with a second engine company, and then in essence we have an attack engine and a supply engine, if you will, with a pump at the hydrant. So it works out very well for us. I think it's a very well thought out plan. But the number one thing is that water supply. In the fire service, we hear a lot about, you know, going in on the tank for the quick attack and that sort of thing. And in some situations, that certainly is appropriate. But for me, in a situation where I'm in an urban atmosphere, if you got to drive by a hydrant on the way in anyhow, you know, why not lay a supply line? Now, easier for us to do it because we run with a minimum of four. So we're able to do that and still have an officer and a firefighter up at the front of the building with that engineer to start stretching a line, whatever the case may be, with that fourth member catching the hydrant. So water supply would be number one, a sustained water supply. Certainly number two on that overall size up, you know, what weapon am I going to use as the officer at this location? And certainly our basic rule of thumb that many good firefighters use is 1¾ is very typically the appropriate weapon of choice for residential operations, and 2½ is typically the appropriate weapon of choice for commercial operations. But based on your description you just gave me, you know, a header of smoke, perhaps a little bit of fire, whatever the case may be, and then upon arrival, you know, some fairly heavy fire involvement, there's nothing wrong. And in fact, I think it's appropriate in that situation that falls into the ADULTS acronym of advanced fire upon arrival, you know, 2½, can and should be appropriate for that situation and some residential fires. So getting an early knockdown on that fire. Now, as you know, Rick, I'm a proponent of smoothbore nozzles for interior attack fire operations, for master streams, for standpipe operations, certainly. And one of the reasons for that is because, to me, from a tactical standpoint, we can hit it head on, and we don't have to worry about pushing fire through that house. So to me, that's something that fire officer needs to be thinking about, is even though there's that standard assessment center answer of I'm going to attack from the unburned side, you know, if the fire's coming out the front, that's our quickest access to it, as opposed to going around the back of the building if that's possible, you know, if it's a dwelling, going through a privacy fence, maybe there's a lock on that, and now having to force entry on a heavily fortified back door. We can hit it head on, and we can absolutely do that, but that fire officer's got to be thinking about making sure that he or she doesn't push fire, and they're going to push fire if they're opening up to a cone-shaped pattern on a combination nozzle. So that's one of the reasons why I'm a component of the smoothbore nozzle. So getting that early knockdown, starting to advance that line into the building after they've able to knock down a heavy body of fire, whatever the case may be. And certainly at that point, with break-apart nozzles, they can take the tip off and they can use 50 feet of 1¾ attached to the end of that line to kind of have now have their cake and eat it too, so to speak. They've knocked down a heavy body of fire, and now they can move to a more maneuverable weapon with 50 feet of working 1¾ at the end of that 2½ nozzle. So just a couple of thoughts right there.
Well, go a little bit more, Dave, real quick on something, though, you hit on. You know, for years people were taught, well, it's the same thing, like for years they were taught to search by hanging on to the guy's boot in front of you, which means you're not searching if you're hanging on to his boot. But anyway, for years they said you have to, and it was one of those you have to's, and, you know, never say never, never say always in a fire service, but you have to fight fires from the unburned side of the home. Yeah, I mean, sometimes that's just not possible, and sometimes you just need to get after it and get, you know, I mean, you know, get, you're only given one option. You know, how do you feel about that whole concept? I mean, the good and bad, you know, you hear people say it. I just have found myself times where, you know what, I have no other choice. Yeah, and often, sometimes the quickest way is to go in and knock it, and if you're not blowing fire through the house, you know what I'm saying, with the nozzle. But what's your thought on that whole you have to, you know, do you believe in that or do you not believe in that?
You have to what, Rick? Have to specifically?
Yeah, you have to fight fire from the unburned portion of the house, unburned side of house out. You know, a lot of guys will say that. You know, they're taught when you pull up, you have to fight fire. You have to go in, lead it. If the fire's out the front, then you got to get to the back and you got to push it. You know, and I don't know necessarily if that's something that the have to has to apply to always fight fires from the unburned portion of the house.
I think it's absolutely inappropriate to say that we have to do that.
Okay.
I mean, certainly, all things being equal, if we can come from the unburned side and we can do it safely and quickly and that sort
yeah.
of thing, certainly it's a textbook thing that will work very effectively for us. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, anybody who's read any of Chief John Norman's work, and certainly the late Bill Clark has some excellent stuff. And for those firefighters listening, if you don't have, you know, Bill Clark's book, Firefighting Principles and Practices, in your library, that's a timeless classic. And even though Bill Clark is since passed on, his information lives with us forever. But many years ago, Bill Clark wrote an article about applying water safely. And certainly John Norman has echoed a lot of that stuff over the years. But they talk about, you know, the ability and oftentimes the need to hit a fire head on. And once again, you can absolutely do it as far as I'm concerned. You simply have to make sure that you're doing it with an appropriate nozzle. And in this case, to me, the smoothbore is the appropriate nozzle. I know that there's a lot of firefighters, well, I could put my fog nozzle on a straight stream. You certainly can do that. I like the simplicity of the smoothbore because I know that it's going to be a solid stream of water when it's open fully, and I know that it's not going to push any fire. So to me, yes, when it's appropriate, we can hit it head-on. And to me, sometimes it's a time factor, Rick, as opposed to going around to the back of the house, to the back of the building, whatever the case may be, having to go through a locked gate to a back door that is now locked that's going to have to be forced. There's this fire is growing exponentially every half minute in our you know, attempt to attack it from the unburned side, whereas several minutes ago we could have started knocking it down by hitting it directly, and we wouldn't have pushed any fire if we're using the appropriate nozzle. And so to me, it's absolutely essential that we keep that in our fire ground computer and our toolbox, that, yeah, it's okay to hit it head-on, and oftentimes it's appropriate to hit it head-on, but if you hit it head-on, don't put it on a cone-shaped pattern to where you're going to push fire throughout the house.
And start high and go low, and all those things we've taught people with nozzle operations and just, exactly. The whole have-to thing I don't buy, and I've had so many people tell me that you have to do that. Hey, we've been visiting with District Chief Dave McGrail of the Denver, Colorado Fire Department on a variety of different things here, and we're kind of focusing now on the whole engine ops and how that contributes, good engine operations, good engine company operations, contributes to the whole firefighter safety and survival concept. But, Dave, thinking along those lines, right. Now, we were talking back with Captain Dave McGrail at that fire. As you're pulling up on that engine at that fire, let's talk to Chief Dave McGrail, District Chief McGrail. And Engine 3 is getting a new firefighter, okay? And, the captain's going to talk with that firefighter, but you're going to have your chance, you know, whether it's at headquarters or your office or when you make your visit to meet that firefighter for the first time. And I want to talk about that one first and the company officer. What does District Chief Dave McGrail expect from that new firefighter coming into his battalion?
Well, you know, I to be honest with you, Rick, I'm going to expect the same thing from him as I am from everybody else and certainly from the fire officer. And, on the Denver Fire Department, every 2 years we rotate our shifts where, we have an A, B, and a C shift. And at the beginning of each year on the Denver Fire Department, or every 2 years on the Denver Fire Department, we rotate. The chiefs go forward a shift, the company officers go backward a shift, and then the crews on individual companies stay the same. And it just it gives all of the firefighters and fire officers and chiefs an opportunity to work with everybody else and kind of share perspectives and have a fresh start, as the case may be. For me, we moved and we started with a new shift at the beginning of 2009. And when I sat down with the officers and the firefighters as I made my rounds to the five different stations and the seven companies that are in my district, I always talk about the same things. I say, number one, we have to have the ability to trust one another, and we build that trust over time. And it's not just a trust on the fire ground and at the emergency, but it's a trust within the firehouse to where if we have issues with one another, let's try and solve those issues with one another first before it becomes something that has to involve others. The second item I talk about is excellence and the importance to me that as whether it's a brand new firefighter on Engine 3 or whether it's a captain, a veteran captain of Engine 23, I say when we leave the building, when we leave this firehouse, as you said earlier, Rick, whether we were playing ping pong or watching a movie or doing a drill or eating the meal, when we leave the building, nobody does it better than the Denver Fire Department. And specifically, nobody does it better than fire companies in District 7 B shift of the Denver Fire Department. So perhaps there's a chief from Lewisville, Texas that's in town visiting, and he sees these Denver firefighters operating at an auto pedestrian accident, at a house fire, at an extrication, whatever the case may be. That fire chief goes back to Lewisville, Texas, and when he's going home on that plane or when he's sitting at his desk, in his mind, he says to himself, you know what? I watched those Denver firefighters operate, and they operate with excellence. It's a very, very excellent organization. And the last thing of the big three that I always give guys is have fun. We got the greatest job in the world, and it's okay to have fun, but make sure we take care of number one and number two first, the trust issue, the excellence issue, and then have fun. Something that you kind of jogged my mind on, right now on the Denver Fire Department, there's a lieutenant's exam going on, and there are several hundred firefighters that are involved in the process of testing for lieutenant right now. They've been through the written exam, and there was a cutoff score for the written exam, and several of them, close to 200, are moving on to the assessment center process. And it's interesting because anytime there's a promotional exam going on our job, there's a number of people who are very engaged in the fire service, at least for that period of time.
Right.
And I had a couple of firefighters in my office the other night, and they were asking me about tactics, and they wanted to pick my brain with regard to the tactics component of the assessment center. And, I told them flat out, I says, I'm not here to teach you how to pass an assessment center. I'll give you tactics on how you can be an excellent lieutenant, in my mind, how you can be an excellent lieutenant when you get promoted, and it may help you pass the tactics portion of your assessment center. But one of the things I told them is I said, guys, it's important to be engaged in the fire service all of the time. Don't just be engaged in the fire service when there's a promotional test going on. Be engaged in the fire service all the time. So your original question, and getting back to that young, brand-new firefighter, I would tell that brand-new firefighter all of those things we just said, but most importantly, I would say to that firefighter, say, what's really going to differentiate you between being an excellent firefighter or just an employee of the organization is your ability to stay engaged in the fire service. And I'm talking about the overall fire service. A firefighter in the American Fire Service that's engaged knows the name Rick Lasky and knows that Rick Lasky is the chief of the Lewisville, Texas Fire Department. He knows the name John Norman. Okay, he knows the name Vincent Dunn. He knows those names. from, and he can gain that vicarious experience and that vicarious knowledge, and just want them to stay engaged in the fire service, because there are some guys that are not engaged. And thank you again for your compliments with regard to the keynote at FDIC, but one of my goals and one of the things that I hope some of the firefighters in attendance there got out of that is, if there's somebody that was once engaged and you know that they're a good guy or a good gal, as the case may be, you know, do what you can to rescue them so that they can become engaged again, engaged in the fire service. To me, that's critical.
I thought that was so incredible, buddy. I leaned over at my, you know, my good buddy John Salk. I said, God, that is that. I will remember your that particular statement. Go out and save somebody. I will remember that for the rest of my life, because when you talk about rescuing someone, saving someone, first you think of is going out and dragging somebody out of a building. You don't ever really apply it sometimes, unfortunately, to what you just said, Dave. That was so. I mean, guys were buzzing and talking about that. I had people, well, we were talking with our leadership class, say we do a little open forum at the end, John and I do. We had students saying, well, it's just like Chief McGrail said earlier, you need to go out and rescue someone. You need to get someone, bring them back. And you're right, there are so many good people, for whatever reason, have drifted. You know, we've all, a lot of people, you get complacent once in a while. I think that's just a fancy word for being lazy. You don't want to, you know what, training is key. Learning, you said it, learning something about this job every day, Dave. I mean, it's free, too. I'm looking at Fire Engineering's website. There's other websites. There's videos, pictures, there's stuff. You don't have to have a budget to get better at what you're doing, right?
Well, it's interesting because so many people in the fire service right now, they hang their hat on this idea that we're not doing the firework that we used to do. And certainly, when we compare what we're doing today to the so-called warriors of the 60s and 70s and part of the 80s, yeah, we can see that the fire call volume in most cities and jurisdictions from the fire service has tapered off, in some cases significantly, from those so-called warriors. But the reality is we're still doing more fires today, I believe, in most jurisdictions than we were for the vast majority of the time of our existence. You know, compare a fire company today to the laid-back, easy-going 50s of our country's existence. You know, that was a real slow, easy-going time. There wasn't a lot going on there in terms of fires, emergency calls, that sort of thing. But the point is, firefighters, I think, fall back on this. Geez, I'm not getting the fires that they used to. The reality is, if firefighters can understand the idea of a vicarious experience, the reality is there's never been a time in this so-called information age, and it not only has to do with fires, but anything. You and I can get on the Internet, and we can pick any topic, and we can learn about it like never before. You don't even have to go to the library anymore.
Right.
The point is, a fire happens in Passaic, New Jersey. I can get on the Internet oftentimes the same day and learn about the specifics of that fire. A firefighter gets injured in Dallas, Texas. You and I can get on the Internet and find out the specifics of that immediately. And so to me, if firefighters in the 21st century of American fire service firefighting understand that there actually is more opportunity for the so-called vicarious experience than there ever has been before, and if they take that seriously and stay engaged in the fire service, to me, they can just be that much better a firefighter because of it. So it's critical for us to stay engaged and to understand that actually the vicarious experience opportunity is greater than it has ever been before.
Well, and that's absolutely incredible advice, buddy, because I was going to ask you then, and you just did it perfectly for us. If we were going to leave our listeners today with a message, that is it right there. It's there for you. It's out there. Stop with the excuses. It's there if you want it. I guess, Dave, it comes down to how good do you want to be at this job? How good do you want to be?
Absolutely.
You know, we've had, and it's been my honor, and I just love this guy. We've been visiting with District Chief Dave McGrail from the Denver, Colorado Fire Department, and you know, I'm gonna go back to one thing before we close things out here. You know, if you ever look at the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, you know, this is the case with Dave and his dad, and just incredible people that have made an incredible difference in the fire service and doing Denver proud. And again, you can feel it. You can feel it. You can hear it in his voice. The pride he has with his fire department, his people, and this fire service. And Dave, let me ask you this as we close things out. If somebody wanted you to come out, and I know you're all over the place and busy, but if they want to get a hold of you to have you come out and do an engine ops class, whether it's high-rise, standpipes, just engine, like you did for us. You did a – God, those sessions you did for our people were incredible. And those little things, they're talking about things when you left, not just the whole piece of cake thing, which we'll have to talk about later, which actually happened here, by the way, in the kitchen. I don't know if I told you that. And they came in laughing about it. It was just like Chief McGrail said. It's the some of the littlest, smallest things that you could have even touched on, which I know why you were doing it, you sneaky, they're still talking about, and it's already made a difference. If someone wanted, you know, Chief Dave McGrail to come out to their fire department and make that kind of difference with their people or at their conference, how would they get a hold of you? Have an email we can give them?
Yeah, the email address would be the easiest, and that's my personal email address. It's my first initial D with my last name McGrail, McGrail, the word Denver, D-E-N-V-E-R, and the letters F-D as in fire department. It's all one word, D McGrail, Denver, F-D, at MSN.com. D McGrail, Denver, F-D, at MSN.com. And, Rick, I appreciate the positive feedback and compliments on the training session we did there in Louisville. It was a pleasure to be there. And yeah, like you say, sometimes these subtle things that sometimes bring out a little bit of humor, I think are give us an opportunity to learn what we're really trying to talk about there. So I thank you for the positive feedback. I'm glad guys are still talking a little bit about the class.
Well, you're making a difference all over, not just North America, obviously. You've been overseas in the fire service. You made a huge difference right here in little old Louisville, and I can't thank you enough, buddy. I was proud to have you here. I am just so proud to have had you on this show. You're another, if you don't mind, another great leader that I'd love to have back one day. I can't thank you enough for your time, pal, and I appreciate everything you're doing for us, and thanks for spending some time with us today, Dave.
Thanks for the invite. I appreciate it very much. I'm flattered that you would ask me to be a part of this. And to all those firefighters that are listening, thank you, firefighters, for staying engaged.
Outstanding. Well, hey, District Chief Dave McGrail was our guest today, Denver, Colorado, and just, again, wonderful, absolutely incredible fire service brother. Takes care of his brothers and sisters, truly like family. We another great show. Folks, again, if you've got any information, if you've got any ideas, please send them our way. We've got probably 3 years of topics we're working off of with different folks, but I couldn't wait to get Dave on. This has been one of those I've been meaning to get to just because of the message he has. Share this, you know, download it, do what you have to do. Get it out there. I know a lot of you listen to it on your way home. You listen to it on your iPods while you're working out and everything else. Spread the word and spread Dave's message. And we're going to close out and finish with two words that we always do, and that's be safe.